Sound of Hockey episode 130. We're calling this one Nothing in Particular. This is a little bit of a different episode. This is Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter. Not joined by Andy Eide or John Barr this week. Reason being, I had a bit of a personal matter to attend to in Minnesota, and it just was making it impossible for us to get together and record this week. So what we did is we spoke to Chris Peters a few days ago. He has some great stuff on the upcoming NCAA tournament, some draft talk, all that good stuff like he always will bring us. Best friend of the pod, of course. So stick around, you're going to enjoy it, but that's going to be the bulk of our episode. I will tell you, next week we promise that we'll get back to regularly scheduled programming and have more of a typical Sound of Hockey episode. But this week, it's just us talking to our best friend Chris Peters, so sit back, relax, here he is, Chris Peters. Ladies and gentlemen, he is back, the best friend of the pod, making his triumphant fourth appearance at Sound of Hockey. I don't know why he keeps saying yes to doing these things. Chris Peters, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Well, Darren, thank you very much for having me. I'm just trying to put a little distance between myself and the second best friend of the pod. So
yeah,
if you keep asking, I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, well, we have that noted here. So Nick Kosanica, yep, and Jason Botterill have each technically appeared twice. Now I say technically because their first appearance in each case was a little bit questionable. Like Jason Botterill was walking past us at the draft and you briefly heard his voice. So that was his first appearance, for example. Whereas you actually have come on and done interviews with us now four times. So you've invested a fair amount of time into our podcast, and we appreciate you for it. So you really, I mean, you truly are the best friend of the pod. And you're battling through some cold symptoms this morning.
Yeah.
I'm told it's not COVID, so that's great. Yeah. We're on Zoom anyway, so we don't really have to, you know, worry about quarantine in front of you or anything like that, because we're already doing it.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, let's hear about your personal news. Our listeners, I'm sure, are dying to hear it. I am the newest subscriber, I imagine, to your website. I was like, man, I better be a subscriber before we start talking.
We shamed him before we got on.
I honestly was like, you know, I know Andy's there. I definitely know John's there. Where's Darren? But there he was, right before the game.
That's right.
Yeah. And I've already read every story on there, so I'm very, very fast.
Well, there you go. It's perfect. You're getting your money's worth already.
Yep. So, all right. So let's hear it. Not all our listeners know what we're talking about. So.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, it's been awesome. I started my own website basically through Substack, which seems to be a popular thing to do these days, just because the media business is unpredictable and terrible, and you never really know what you're going to get. So I decided that I was not going to wait any longer for the right opportunity and just create one for myself. And so if you go to hockeysense.substack.com, you're going to find a website that has, you know, quite a bit of stories that you can read without a subscription. But then there's, you know, if you're looking for the in-depth draft coverage and a lot of the prospect kind of coverage, that's going to be mostly behind, you know, the paywall and give you a chance to subscribe. And that's really just because doing prospect work is actually really expensive to do. So a lot of the money that I've, you know, gotten through subscriptions, I'm trying to put right back into the site in terms of being able to travel to certain events. Obviously, it's not as easy to do that now, but there are a few things that I can travel to, you know, controlling some of the expenses. It's also, you know, you have to pay for video and all these other things that you have to try to do the job from afar. So it's still really expensive to do it that way as well. So basically, I've just been doing that. We've had a lot of college hockey content just because it's that time of year where, you know, we're getting close to the Frozen Four and all the conference tournaments are going. So it's been a lot of fun to do. And then there's also, in addition to the website, a podcast called Talking Hockey Sense, which I'm hosting. And the first two guests were Bob McKenzie and Corey Pronman. And, you know, we've got more fun guests coming up as well. So it's been exciting to do. It's been crazy at times, but I'm really excited with how things have come together. And I I appreciate all you guys for subscribing. Tim Lywicki is also a subscriber.
He
made it official on Twitter. If you're a Seattle Kraken fan and this is your first draft, this is going to be a great way. You know, at the end of this month, I'll have my first, you know, draft rankings on that particular site, which is a continuation from what I did at ESPN.
Very cool.
We've also covered the pending free agents right. that the Kraken theoretically could sign once they make their final payment. I think that's interesting. And, you know, I am blown away how much content's already been created in value. Like I've enjoyed every minute. I'm not just, you know, kissing up to the best friend of the pod. And that wasn't part of the condition of you coming on, but I've really enjoyed it. But one thing I'm wondering is, because you're on your own, does that give you like more freedom? And because it seems like, you know, you do the notebook dump where you just kind of, hey, this is what I saw at these USHL games, these particular prospects. You know, that stuff is like really cool to me, but it's not something I would see in mainstream media sometimes. So I really enjoyed that. Do you get that freedom? Do you enjoy that piece?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was actually a huge thing. A huge reason why I decided to go independent as well is because I was like, there is so much that I see or learn or, and they just don't fit in a national story, you know, where I have to give you nuggets of the most important information that I collect and put that on, you know, on a story on ESPN.com. But you might not care about the fourth line guy that I saw have a really good game that I think is a rising prospect in hockey. And I can put that in there now. And so I do that notebook dump for a couple of reasons. One, I make them purposely long and I don't expect people to read the whole thing. I try to put as many things as many people would like to read. And I know if I'm creating content on a niche website, the people that are paying to subscribe are hockey nerds. And I'm going to give them the most detail I possibly can, which would not work on a national website. You have to try to say, you know, basically hit as many teams as you can, or to make sure that stuff about the Detroit Red Wings will do really well. So we need to do this story or right. something about the Rangers, you know, so let's try to do that where you're trying to hit as, you know, the largest audience possible. My stuff is particularly for the niche audience. And so I don't like, you know, I don't need 1,000 subscribers. I'd love to have 1,000 subscribers, but if I have a few hundred dedicated subscribers, you know, I can do that little very niche, narrow kind of stuff on top of the broad stuff that I'm going to do anyway. So it just allows me, you know, basically if you subscribe to that website and you did subscribe to ESPN Plus, you're not going to get, you know, all the video content and the college hockey games that you can watch and the NHL, you know, an NHL game every night. But what you are going to get is content that is much more specific, and there's just, it's all over the place, you know? And so there's a lot more college hockey content because that was something that I could only do a couple times a year at ESPN, even though that's one of the, you know, one of the levels I'm most passionate about and I have the most fun covering. So yeah. So, I mean, so in some ways it's for the readers and in other ways it's just selfishness because I want, I'm like, this is important to me. So it's now important to you. Yeah. And that's kind of how I've operated with it.
So are you calling us niches
or nerds or hockey nerds? Which one?
I'd say nerds is more appropriate. I would never call you a niche.
Okay.
To your face.
Yeah. I'm glad you just mentioned college hockey. So there's a lot of college hockey stuff happening. So we're recording with you here on Friday. The Women's Frozen Four Championship game is happening on Saturday. Let's start with that. So who won that game and why was it Wisconsin?
Well, because of Daryl Lotz, of course.
Oh, yeah.
The best, probably one of the best women's players in college hockey. And then on the other side, you got Alina Mueller, who's, you know, one of the best players in college hockey and in women's hockey at large. So, yeah, but I think watching the two semifinals yesterday, I was so impressed with the way that Wisconsin played just because it's how they always play with speed and tenacity, and there's some physicality. And, you know, you watch the game, the other game where it was Minnesota Duluth and Northeastern, and you got a tremendous showcase of basically goaltending for one, because you had the two goaltenders in that game were two of the best in the country all year. And then, you know, you have Alina Mueller, you have Skylar Fontaine, who you guys may recall from previous podcast appearances, the name Gunnar Wolf Fontaine. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Skylar Fontaine is Gunnar Wolf's sister.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She had 16 shots on goal, and there were 46. So she had 35% of her team shots on goal in that game, and she scored the game-winning goal. 16 shots on goal, She plays defense. It was an incredible performance. I think we'll see her on U.S. national teams. You know, she's been in the program before. But to see a performance like that, I mean, it was such a tremendous showcase of women's hockey.
I love that you just brought that back full circle with the Gunnar Wolf connection. I personally didn't make that connection, so I very much appreciate you bringing that back. And then we'll jump over to the men's side. So, you know, the selection show is coming up on Sunday. So again, by the time that you know, you hear this, obviously our listeners will probably know the outcome. But so who's going to win that tournament and why is it Wisconsin?
I mean, they certainly have a chance. The Badgers certainly have a chance. I mean, I think if you have Cole Caulfield, anything is possible at this point. Yeah. You know, he leads the nation in goals by 10. So that's pretty good. And I don't know if you can hear, but my dog's going nuts. She's a huge Badger fan.
Yeah.
the field is fascinating to me. You know, I think the team to beat is really North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for a number of reasons. One, they're the deepest team in the country. They have the best blue line in the country. They have, you know, more than adequate goaltending in Adam Scheel. They have, I think, the number one center in the country in Shane Pinto, will probably finish second to Caulfield in the Hobie Baker voting this year. At least he'd be in the mix for me. And I think the biggest thing that separates North Dakota from the rest of the field is that so many of their guys could have left last year and signed contracts, and they decided not to because they had felt that loss of opportunity last year. They felt they had a chance to win the national title last year. Then the season, you know, ends prematurely, mm-hmm. and they don't have a season. So Jordan Kawaguchi and Matt Kierstead, who are two of the top free agents in college hockey right now, were the top two probably last year, or were, you know, among the top five last year in college free agents. They decided to come back. And even though there was, you know, there was no guarantee that there was going to be a season this year, but those guys made the commitment. And they said, you know, and so I think that puts this team on a mission. And then they've got tremendous freshmen. You've got Jake Sanderson, who was the number five pick in the draft and plays tons of minutes for them. You know, Tyler Clevin, who was also with Sanderson on the World Junior team this year for USA and just absolutely murders people. and then Reese Gaber, who's undrafted, but was a superstar in the USHL and has become an impact player for them as a freshman. I mean, they're just a really well-balanced, well-rounded team. So I think that North Dakota is in the mix. But, you know, you look at Wisconsin is in there. I think that there's a real good chance that, you know, Minnesota contends for the title.
Yeah.
Great depth, speed. They have, you know, Jack LaFontaine has been an incredible goaltender this year. I think that the top two lines for Minnesota could go up against anybody in the country and hold their own. They have a really good blue line that's really mobile and quick. And then you've got, you know, Boston College with Spencer Knight. Spencer Knight just had a really tough Hockey East semifinal where, you know, he kind of collapsed in the third period. And it was one of the worst stretches of his game that I've personally ever seen. But he is, you know, he could steal games. We saw it at the World Juniors. He can win you games when you need it most. And then on top of that, you have Alex Newhook and Matt Boldy. Matt Boldy and Spencer Knight are both Hobie Baker top 10 players. You know, Alex Newhook, had he played a full season, would have been in the Hobie top 10 because he was gone for Canada for their World Junior camp and then got hurt. So he's only played, you know, he's averaging well over a point per game, but he's only played, I think, 11 or so games so far this season. So and then they also added in some really key freshmen like Nikita Nestorenko and Colby Ambrosio. And then their defense is led by Drew Hellison, who I think has taken a huge step forward in his development. He played for the World Junior team this year. He scored some big goals. You know, I've always viewed him as more of a defender first, but I think that he's shown flashes of offensive ability. And then they have other guys like Marshall Warren and Jack St. Ivany that are on their blue line that can really, you know, kind of propel them forward. So, you know, I think when you look at those teams and the ones that I mentioned, North Dakota, Boston College, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, and that's all, those are national title contending teams. They're the top four on my most recent confidence rankings. You know, I think that they have the goods to, you know, to contend for that title. And really, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, it is the most anything can happen tournament there is in hockey.
Yeah.
And we've seen number ones fall to number 16s. In the tournament, we've seen all kinds of different things happen. And, you know, even though, like I said, you know, North Dakota's on a mission to win the national championship, well, now you got to win, you know, your next four games to make sure that happens.
Okay, so who do we think, I mean, outside of those four teams, are there any other squads that you think have a shot at it?
Any dark horses out there?
I think one of my favorite dark horses has been that way all season is Quinnipiac. And they have a great goaltender in Keith Petrozelli, who's a Detroit Red Wings draft pick. They have Odin Tufto, who's the second leading scorer in the country behind Caulfield. He's basically guaranteed 40 points a season. for his entire collegiate career. He's the highest scoring player in college hockey over the last four seasons. But then they have a really, really good decor. Peter DeLiberatore is a Vegas Golden Knights draft pick. Zach Metsa has got over 20 points this season. You know, so they have some really quality defense. And then they also have Tyus Mlynarczyk, who's been a clutch goal scorer for them. He's a freshman. He got drafted by Florida last year. And he was a guy that was on my radar for the first round in the last draft. But he got hurt, missed most of the season, and slipped to the third round. And now the Florida Panthers have great value because he looks even better than he did in his U18 season. So I think that's a team that, with the way that they play, the way that they're coached, and the goaltending that they can get, that's a team that could surprise some people as a bottom half of the bracket team that goes on a run.
Yeah, I'm very surprised by Quinnipiac's ability to recruit players to Hamden, Connecticut. I mean, they've had some pretty good teams the last few years, and some elite talent that's gone through there. So I find that very interesting that they're able to pull that off. I know they do have a really nice arena, so maybe the kids are.
Yeah, they do, and I think Rand Pecknold, their coach, has a proven track record of developing players and helping them move on. They don't have a ton of guys that have played in the NHL. You know, I think Matthew Pekka is one guy that comes to mind. You know, who's kind of kicked around the NHL a little bit. But I think the real thing there is that if you go to Quinnipiac, you sense that you have a chance to win a national championship. They've had great goaltending over the years. They've had guys that have stepped up for them and made a big impact. And, you know, I think the ECAC, it's gotten, you know, a bad rap over the years. But, you know, if you play Cornell and Harvard, teams like that, you're getting your money's worth in terms of the difficulty it is to play against teams like that and to learn how to play against teams like that. So I think that's also a key thing. But yeah, I mean, they've really built an impressive program the last couple of years.
Switching over to the upcoming NHL draft, there was a lot of talk of moving the draft, either backing it up or having two drafts next year. There was a lot of that thrown out there. It sounds like it's not moving and it's going to go on as expected. Is that your understanding? And were you in favor of moving the draft, considering all the issues this year with limited viewings?
So I've always felt, you know, since the draft was moved to July, that is when it should be. You know, I definitely feel for the players in the OHL that don't know when their season's going to begin. Mm-hmm. I definitely feel for the scouts that haven't been able to watch those players and see how they've progressed.
I feel for you, but not being able to, you know, watch as many games.
Yeah, you need more hockey to watch, Chris.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I know. I will be completely honest. It is so nice to have staggered seasons because I didn't have to think about or do anything with the WHL and OHL until just now. And it's allowed me to build a good base of reports on USHL players and college players. I've watched a ton of that. And now that the WHL is starting, I can focus on that. And then, you know, and then the QMJHL too, it's been so staggered. That's actually been the most frustrating league for me to evaluate, because I don't know how I'm supposed to look at a guy who will play, you know, five games and take a month off, you know, like just because of a shutdown. And that's challenging. But the segmented season has allowed me to kind of pick and choose. Whereas, you know, you're drinking out of a fire hose when you're evaluating prospects for any draft, because there are hundreds of players. But, you know, but what I will say is that even though those leagues haven't started yet, most of the players that I need to see have played a significant enough amount of games. And this is true of the scouts too. And so when one of the first pieces that I did for Hockey Sense that is unlocked and you can read it on there was basically I talked to 10 scouts where I said, what is your preference? And I gave them the two options. I gave them the option of either having the draft this year or delaying the draft another year and doing two drafts in 2022, which was on the table for the NHL. Every single one of them said draft in July over that option, you know, qualified that as saying I'd also prefer July draft to going halfway through next season. So, and I felt the same way, because most of the players that I needed to see, I got to see. And even the guys like in the OHL, so Brant Clark went and played in Slovakia, the top prospect in the OHL this year. He went over and played in Slovakia. Brennan Othman played in Switzerland, I believe. And then they had Francesco Pinelli played in Slovenia. You know, they were finding leagues to play in. And it's hard to evaluate those guys in those leagues. And you're like, how much do I really know? But, you know, if you just focus in on that individual player, you can learn a lot about them just no matter where they're playing. So, you know, Brant Clark's playing in a very difficult pro league to score in, but he's scoring points. So that's, you know, a feather in his cap. And whenever he does come back to the OHL, you know, I would fully expect him to dominate that league. And so, yeah, so, I mean, that's a big reason why I decided the way that I felt about the draft, just keep it where it is. It's also the best path forward to getting back on schedule as well. That's another key thing for me. You know, we're already so far behind. How do we get to a point where we can actually be close to what we had before? You know, if we're going to have a full season next year, let's make sure it starts with everybody playing on a level playing field. And I think having the draft now is the best way to do that.
Looking at that July draft, what impact do you think ultimately these limited viewings or this crazy scouting season is going to have? Are we even going to notice a difference, or will we have to wait and see if there's more bust or missed drafts down the road? Do you think we'll notice that impact?
I think we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, I certainly think that there is going to be more variance in terms of how teams set up their boards. You know, there's already no consensus about who the number one draft pick is this year. And we're no closer to getting that solved. And it's really going to depend on who picks first in terms of what they're going to do. So I think as we're trying to build consensus, I think one of the things that we do, especially in the public scouting realm, we're obviously using our own opinions, but I do think that there's some guidance from what we hear. Usually you get a lot of similar answers, but then this year it's really not been that way. You might hear three different things about a player. What'll be interesting to me is how teams use this experience with video scouting for how they set up their budgets in the future. How many guys are going to be on the road? I think that one thing that we will see across the board is that teams will stop sending multiple scouts to the same event, which is something that was really frequent and always seemed. I think there's a good reason to do it because everybody sees things differently and you can actually have those conversations right after that game. Yeah, but I think the teams are going to become a little bit more conservative in their budgeting for where they send scouts and how often they send them there. But that's where we'll see some of the changes. I don't think that we'll have to wait and see. Like, could there be more busts from last year's draft or this year's draft? I mean, certainly, because you're operating off of less information you would have had in a normal season. But then there are teams that I think, you know, that their scouts are so easily adaptable to video, to limited views. Those are the teams that are going to have success. And then we're going to look back and say, how did they get this guy here? How did they get that guy there?
Yeah.
But the thing is the draft is hard no matter what. In the most normal season, it humbles you all of the time. I've been humbled countless times. And I take solace in the fact that NHL teams get humbled about as often as I do. So that's certainly, I think there's going to be a lot left to be learned about this year. I think a lot of teams are going to review their practices after this year. But for the most part, I think that we're going to get a similar draft in terms of hit rates and miss rates.
Are there players who have an advantage, you know, the way this season has played out? Is it maybe the college guys who got going earlier, the guys in Europe who've played a full season, or maybe even the junior guys who are maybe the last players that scouts see because they're just now starting? Do you think anybody has an advantage or disadvantage there?
I think the players that got to start on time certainly would have some amount of an advantage. Now, even the college hockey season started later than it normally would have.
True.
And did not play as many games as they normally would have. But I do think that the longer the gap between time playing, if you didn't have, you know, not every player has the same advantages. Not all of them are with the top agents that could have set them up with a skills coach, you know, three times a week, or set them up with ice time three times a week or whatever, or, you know, five times a week. You know, I mean, there were guys that were skating as soon as rinks opened in Canada, they were skating. As soon as rinks opened in the US, they were skating. That wasn't available to everybody. So I think that the players that started on time, one of the things I actually heard from the college guys is that they actually liked the extra practice time that they had to start the season. They basically had a month-long runway to start the season. And so when I was talking to guys at Michigan, they're like, hey, you know, we're working on all these different skill things in practice. We're not just working on systems. We're working on our game. We're actually working on our individual game. And because in a normal season, you don't have that timeline. And so I think that's an advantage for those players. But then there is a lot to be said about being the last guys that everybody sees. Mm-hmm. You know, I look last year at last year's draft and Columbus picked Chinakhov in the first round. And Chinakhov, if you would have picked him solely off of the game that he played last season, the way that he played last season, I don't think he's a first round pick. But he started the KHL season on fire, scoring tons of goals. So he was playing when he was drafted. Like, you know, like he was in his season already, this season right now, when he was drafted. And so you wonder, is it recency bias? Is it just the benefit of more information? But then you also have to take all those performances that are coming from the OHL players and the WHL players. You take it with the grain of salt and understanding that these guys have not played hockey in over a year. With that in mind, How much do you grade those guys on a curve? How much do you have to, whatever, you know, and the scouts have all the context. They find out how often these guys practice, how much runway they had leading up to the season to get themselves ready. But yeah, but I mean, like, I think it's hard to find, you know, any significant advantage for any player because everything is so different. But as far as what the teams are going to see, I think that they're much better at cold analysis and trying to just find out how much can we take into account what this player did in the WHL this season, even though we hadn't played in a year. So I have faith in the teams that have invested in their scouting staffs that they won't have a problem with figuring that out.
And so 2021 is the Seattle Kraken's first amateur draft, NHL entry draft.
As you may know.
And as you may know, yeah, as we, as our listeners may know. And the Seattle Kraken is guaranteed a top six pick based on lottery conditions, and they could go higher. But usually there's a little bit of a tier or a drop off in kind of the top 10. And you could, it's probably a little too early to kind of draw the line now, but you could say the top three this year, there was a drop off from after Stutzel went number three. That might not play out, right? There's still a lot of hockey to be played by those guys. But is there a drop off this year kind of in the top 10? Or is there, like, should we be rooting for a top two pick or top four pick? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I think, I mean, obviously always root for the earliest pick you can get. But it's my feeling that the drop off in this draft class starts before one. You look at last year's draft and you look at the top three, there is not a single player in this draft that I view as in that tier of those players that were picked in the first three last year. However, there is a group of more than six players that I feel are in that top tier of this draft. And the interesting thing about it is there's players in every position in that range. There are players that have a variety of skill sets. And so, when I say every position, I even mean goaltender. Because Jesper Wallstedt is the top goalie this year. He is going to be a first-round draft pick and probably a high one. Basically, I'll just kind of break it down like this just to give you some names and some things to keep an eye on, because I think that whoever the Kraken get in that range of six, like, I personally, if I were them, I would love to start my franchise off with a guy that I view could be our number one center down the line. For me, that'd be Matty Beniers at Michigan. He is in the conversation right now for number one overall. Like, there is no traditional number one pick here. There's no Alexi Lafreniere or Jack Hughes where it's just a dynamic talent that's so much better than everybody else. It's just, it does not exist. I view Matty Beniers very similarly to how I view Jonathan Toews, in terms of, here's a guy, Jonathan Toews did not have all the flash and all of the, you know, he had skill. He had, you know, great start to his career at North Dakota. But he was a tremendous two-way player. He was aggressive. He was competitive. He had all this fire. And we see it, you know, we saw it throughout his career, and hopefully he's going to be okay and be able to come back, you know, over what illness has kept him out so far this season. But I view a guy like Matty Beniers as a guy that's a franchise building block, because he plays the way that you want to play. And, I was talking to a scout. I was at a game. Matty Beniers was not playing in it, but we were talking about it. And I was just talking about the Michigan guys. What do you think of them? And he called Matty Beniers a May-June player, meaning this is a guy that's going to win you Stanley Cups. This is a guy that's going to, you know, be there in the playoffs. And so, you know, he played for USA. He was the number two center for USA at the World Juniors this year. I mean, he probably played enough to be considered the number one center. He's such an impact player. He impacts the game in all zones, and then he does have the skill to finish. So you look at a player like that and you say, oh, wow, that's great. But then there's also Owen Power, who's a 6'5" defenseman, probably a top pairing guy. He's not a lock to be a number one defenseman, but I think that he's in the same mold of a Victor Hedman kind of player. Really good, a really good skater, great mobility, defends well, probably could stand to be a little bit meaner, a little more physical with his defending, but he gets pucks up ice. He does everything. Everything's really fluid and calm and under control. So, you know, those guys are really towards the top for me. But then you say, okay, well, look at what Quinn Hughes has done for the Vancouver Canucks. Then you say, oh, there's his brother Luke, who's also in this draft, who's 6'2", where Quinn is like 5'10". And Luke skates very similarly to Quinn. He doesn't have the straight ahead speed that Quinn does yet, but that could come. Not quite as dynamic offensively either, but he is an offensive defenseman. He scores points. He gets pucks through to the net. He makes plays. So those are the types of players that you're looking at. And then you say, well, if we're in a certain range and this guy's available, we could have our number one goalie of the future, and that'd be Jesper Wallstedt, who plays in Sweden and was shockingly to me, not the number one goalie for Sweden at the World Juniors this year. He split time, but in the game, in the games that mattered, he didn't get in there. Now they eventually would go to him and they'd pull their starter and put him in there, and he looked great. And then it's like, oh man, it didn't look good for the coach. So, you know, but then you say, okay, well, we didn't get any of those guys, or, you know, maybe in the top three, and we need a dynamic winger. Well, we've got two that I'm debating between in terms of which order I'd have them in. And that's William Eklund, who's had one of the best U18 seasons that you can have in the Swedish Hockey League. He dealt with illness and injury and all kinds of stuff this year. He missed out on the World Juniors because of COVID protocol. Dynamic player. Plays with Alexander Holtz for Djurgården. And on a top line, we're talking a 17 or an 18-year-old player on a top line at the SHL level. Not just a top line guy, but a clutch performer, a guy that scores goals for them and makes big plays. So that's a key guy. And then you look in the WHL that's now started. Dylan Gunther had 8 points in his first two games of the season for the Edmonton Oil Kings. Dynamic, again, guy that can skate, guy that has skill. So these are the types of players that you're talking about. These are guys that could potentially be franchise building blocks. Are they as good as an Alexi Lafreniere or a Tim Stützle or a Quentin Byfield? No, they're not, but they are good enough to be guys that you can start building your prospect pool around. And so I think that even though we don't have a top guy in this draft, we have a good cluster of players within the first six or seven, maybe even eight players in this draft. And I really think that there's still no consensus on who the number one guy is. It could be any one of those guys that I just mentioned. That's how much variance there is right now. So no matter where the Kraken pick, they're going to get an impact prospect. It's going to come down to fit, role, those kinds of things. You know, it's best player available, yes, but they're also picking for the long-term view. And you know, I look back to the Vegas Golden Knights, and I'm sorry to keep rambling here, and I'll let you guys talk again.
It's literally why we had you on the podcast.
Yeah.
But you know, I look at the Vegas Golden Knights, and they, you know, the way that they ordered their picks, and you know, they went with Cody Glass to be that guy who could be a future number one center. Not sure that's going to happen based on what I've seen so far. I think he's a good player. I don't think that he's a top six center at this point. He certainly still could develop into one. But, you know, I look at, like, you know, a guy like Nick Suzuki, and I would much rather have him still if I were picking. And those are guys that were very close, you know, on my personal board. I wasn't actually working that draft for anybody, but those are guys that I liked really closely together. So I think you do have to consider fit, role, all those things. But I think I still think the top two guys in this draft are Owen Power and Matty Beniers. Then I look at Luke Hughes and William Eklund as guys that would be that next group for me that I'd hope I'd get one of.
Do you think that maybe the NHL grants exceptional status to Connor Bedard and lets him get drafted early?
No, but you know what? I mean, you know, it's only 2 years away. So I think the Kraken certainly will hope to to be competitive right away and not be in the mix for Connor Bedard.
Yeah, I know. That's the rub right there.
Yeah, exactly.
We want to be in contention, but we don't want to be in contention.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I think the key thing for the Kraken is to try to do as much as they can this year, like the Golden Knights did in terms of building that prospect pool. Because while they don't have Nick Suzuki anymore and they don't have Eric Brandstrom, they have Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty.
Mm-hmm.
And those are players that got them there, that got those guys there. So the idea of building a surplus of draft picks and prospects is probably one of the most important things that you can do. The problem is that I think most teams realize that that wasn't the best idea. And so you got to try to be creative. But I think if you can end up with a large draft pool, and then, you know, Cody Glass might not end up being the best player from that draft, but the Golden Knights first draft, they have so many hits in that first draft class because they have Nick Hague, who's on their roster. They have Jack Dugan, who was one of the best players in college hockey last year and off to a great start in the NHL. You know, so they found guys that are going to play for them. And so it's less about finding superstars. Like in your first pick, you hope you pick a superstar, but you're going to find guys that are going to build out your roster for years to come in the later rounds in this draft and next draft. So it's important to have picks, lots of them.
Which of those top six guys do you think has the best shot of playing right away at 18 in the NHL? And why is it Beniers?
Yeah, it is Beniers. It is Beniers because he has the physical package. He's strong. He's competitive. I've never seen him intimidated in any game. He has the speed and the quickness. His brain operates at the level that you need at the NHL level. You know, I think Power could play in the NHL too next year. I think whoever drafts him is going to try to sign him immediately and get him in the NHL. regardless of if he goes number one or not. But I do think that Beniers has the most likely game to translate, because the other thing that he can do is you don't need to put him on your top two lines. You can put him on your third line, and he's still going to find a way to make an impact. And he might be a middle six guy. You know, you expect your guy. I think he's a number one center eventually, but it's going to take him a while to get there. That's the guy for sure.
So one last question for you here, Chris. If you could take any developmental level coach, whether that's college or junior hockey or wherever, and make them the first Seattle Kraken coach, who are you naming?
Any developmental coach?
Yeah, just somebody who's not like a retread from the NHL, right? That maybe
I gotcha. You know, I think the name that comes to mind immediately for me is Nate Lehman at Providence, and he was the head coach of Team USA at the World Juniors this year. His name has been brought up for the Sabres, and I actually wrote in my newsletter this week, don't do it, Nate. Yeah. Don't do it. Don't jump on that grenade.
Yeah, no.
That is a grenade. That is a ticking time bomb. And actually, Ron Rolston, who is one of his best friends and is the associate head coach at Providence on his bench, has been through that before. He was the Sabres head coach right after Lindy Ruff, and he lasted, you know, didn't even get two full seasons, didn't even get one full season before they made a move. And he was never put in a position to succeed. That is, if you're a first-year head coach, there's no way you want to go to the Sabres at this point. You would want to go to the Kraken, though.
Yeah.
So, Lehman, I mean, like,
Lehman would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason that I say Nate, too, is he has a proven track record of building, programs, of building culture, of building teams quickly. He was at Union College before that. Right after he left Union, and this is, you know, they brought in Shane Gostisbehere. They had guys that have played more in the AHL. I'm thinking like Jeremy Welsh, and they had Matt Brody, and like they had all these players that were quality players that were overlooked for whatever reason. Like they got Gostisbehere before he was ever drafted out of prep school. But he built that program up, and he left, and they immediately won the national championship. You know, so he left them on the path to a national title. Then he goes to Providence and he wins a national title there. And you look at the guys that he's developed there into NHL players. And it's not just, you know, the guys like that became stars. Most of them, not a lot of them did become stars. Most of them became depth guys, but it's Brandon Tanev and Noel Achari and Mark Jankowski and players like that, where, you know, they're not top tier guys. But then they had Jack Dugan, who I mentioned earlier, who's with the Golden Knights now. He was the top scorer in college hockey last year. You know, and then you see him at the World Junior level. And that U.S. team was not as good as Canada. They were not. I can tell you that for a fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm American as they come.
I think you did tell us that for a fact.
I did. I said, I don't think they're going to win. I don't think they're going to win. But I did think that Nate Lehman was one of the perfect guys for that group, because you look at the way they played that game against Canada. He laid out his game plan after, and it was just like, oh, it was brilliant. I mean, basically, they used every advantage that they had, which was speed and tenacity and physicality, to completely take Canada off their game. And he used a phrase that I hadn't really heard before. It's such a coach phrase, but it was like, you know, we wanted to make sure that their defense had to start plays with their backs to the rest of the ice. We wanted them facing the glass at all times, because we don't want them to move the puck up ice. And they did that to a T. And so you look at the way the players buy in to what he does. And I think that's important. Now, I think it's a lot more difficult to do that at the NHL level. But I think if I'm, you know, there are guys like him that I think make total sense to make that jump. And maybe it's not with the Kraken, maybe it's somewhere else where it's more established, and that, you know, you have a veteran core, and or maybe you're a team that's younger and needs development. But I think that, you know, he's not going to go into any situation intimidated, even if he does jump on the Sabres grenade. Like, I don't think he's going to go into any situation intimidated, because he's been at Union College, where nobody thought he could win, and built a national championship team. He went to Providence College, a program with tremendous history, but not a lot of championship success, and built a title contender without having the elite of the elite recruits. I think that's a tribute to coaching. I think that the Kraken are more likely than not to go with a veteran coach of some kind. I think that's probably the safest play.
Yeah.
But yeah, I look at a Nate Lehman. That guy is an NHL head coach with a bullet eventually. Mm. Whenever a question like that comes up, he's immediately the first name that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he were to come here, could we start marketing Kraken barrels to use, you know, for the
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I can confirm that was a barrel. It was not a garbage can that was on the ice in Canada.
I mean, you probably could throw garbage into it if you wanted to.
You could.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it, but I'm pretty, I don't even think it had an open, well, maybe it did. I don't know. I don't know. But what I'd say, when you win, doesn't matter. You do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah. Do whatever you want. All right. Well, thank you very much, Chris, for battling through whatever illness you are fighting. Glad to see you on your feet and excited to read all this great new content that I've now subscribed to. So,
yeah, thank you. And thank you for subscribing. And thank you guys for all the times I've been able to come on. I will come on again. So to make it lucky number 5, I want to be the first member of the 5-timers club.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
you get a plaque. You get a plaque.
I can't wait. I can't wait for that. But yeah, and thank you all for subscribing as well and giving me the opportunity to talk about the website, because I'm really excited about it. And I do hope that you know, that Kraken fans find some value. If you haven't learned about the NHL draft yet and you're curious, you know, definitely I'd say the end of this month is probably going to be the best time to subscribe. And you can even just pick up a monthly subscription and cancel right after if you want. Just to see the draft rankings. Yeah. I'm kind of banking on that.
I'm going to do a solid. The content's great. It's yeah. not just about the rankings. And I think it really can translate to people that are new, relatively new to hockey, or like trying to ramp up their coverage of hockey and understanding of hockey. I think it's phenomenal. It covers things at the right level, and it's bite-sized too. You dump so much content into one post. You can just sample whatever you want to get out of it, whether it be college or prospects or free agents. I love it, and I'm really excited to see where you go with this, because I was thinking about it the other day. I've been following you since your original United States hockey blog. And then I remember you at CBS, and then, you know, obviously at ESPN, and now here. And it's just, it's awesome, man. I loved your content over the years, and this is almost like probably going to be the best content you've delivered yet. I'm convinced that's the case.
Thanks. Yeah, that's a lot of pressure, but I'm ready to that's the kind of pressure I like, because it's been so fun, and thank you so much for the kind words too. Because you have been following me for a long time. I think I've been beating the Seattle NHL drum as long as I've known you too.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad that we're almost there too, because I think that this is going to be a tremendous boon for hockey in the Pacific Northwest. And I think it's going to be great for hockey in the United States in general. I think having Seattle and the passion that market provides to sports, and I think having the people that are running the Kraken right now and doing such a tremendous job in the ramp up to getting started, I think this is going to be a game changer for the league. And I really can't wait to see what Seattle Kraken jerseys look like on ESPN, because that is going to be hockey fans are in for a treat. And even though I don't work there anymore, I think that this is like the perfect time for hockey right now. I feel like we're on the cusp of really taking this thing to the next level.
All right, Chris Peters, we have successfully accomplished the Minnesota goodbye. Which is where you say goodbye and then you and you continue talking for another 10 minutes. But
also the Iowa goodbye.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much for doing this as always, and best of luck on your new website and your podcast.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. My pleasure.
All right. Thank you again to Chris Peters for joining us for the fourth time on Sound of Hockey. So great to talk to you as always. As I promised at the top of the show, we will be back next week for a more regular episode where we do all of our bits, all of our segments, all the things that people are clamoring to hear each and every week. But hope you enjoyed the episode here and the banter with Chris Peters, who we always very much enjoy having on. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it for you on the next episode. And we will talk to you all next week for episode 131. Cheers.